ఘోషిణ వధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. ఓం పూర్ణమద పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి. శ్రుతి స్మృతి పురాణానాం ఆలయం కరుణాలయం నమామి భగవత్పాదం శంకరం లోక శంకరం శంకరం శంకరాచార్యం కేశవం బాదరాయణం సూత్రభాష్యకృతౌ వందే భగవంతౌ పునః పునః. ఈశ్వరో గురురాత్మేతి మూర్తిభేద విభాగినే వ్యోమవద్వ్యాప్తదేహాయ దక్షిణామూర్తయే. ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవతా నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రసితాం పురాణమునినా మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబత్వామనుసందధామి భగవత్ గీతే భవద్వేషిణీం యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణేంద్ర రుద్ర మరుతః స్తున్వంతి దివ్యైస్తవైః వేదైః సాంగపదక్రమోపనిషదైః గాయంతి యం సామగాః ధ్యానావస్థితతర్జతేన మనసా పశ్యంతి యం యోగినః యస్యాంతన్న విదుఃసురః స్వర్గణాః దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. విల్ డిసైడ్ ది ఫస్ట్ ఫోర్ వర్సెస్. శ్రీ భగవానువాచ ఊర్ధ్వమూలమధః శాఖం అశ్వత్థం ప్రాహురవ్యయం ఛందాంసి యస్య పర్ణాని యస్తం వేద స వేదవిత్. అధశ్చోర్ధం ప్రసృతాస్తస్య శాఖాః గుణ ప్రవృద్ధా విషయ ప్రవాళాః అధశ్చ మూలాన్యనుసంతతాని కర్మానుబంధీని మనుష్యలోకే నరూపమస్యేహ తథోపలభ్యతే నాంతో న చాదిర్న చ సంప్రతిష్ఠ అశ్వత్థమేనం సువిరూఢమూలం అసంగశస్త్రేణ దృఢేన చిత్వా తత్పదం తత్పరిమార్గితవ్యం యస్మిన్ గతాన నివర్తంతి భూయః తమేవ చాద్యం పురుషం ప్రపద్యే యతః ప్రవృత్తిః ప్రసృతా పురాణీ. This chapter began with a description of the samsara, that is our life, and it was described as a tree. Yastam veda savedavit, one who knows this tree of samsara, he vedavit, he is a knower of the Vedas, he knows everything. Meaning that when we know the tree of samsara, we know whatever there needs to be known. I mean, there is no end to what we can know, of course. There is no end to the information, but whatever we need to know for living our life successfully, for being happy, for being free, which is basically what we want in our life, is freedom, happiness. And whatever we are doing is for the purpose of that freedom or happiness. Even the variety of information that we are gathering from all sources also is ultimately for the purpose of freedom or happiness. So whatever we do with the expectation that as a result of that, we will be happy, we will be free. So Lord Krishna says, what is the means of the happiness or freedom that you are seeking? And as we have said a number of times, not only are we seeking happiness, we are seeking the unconditional happiness, meaning how to be happy at all times, at all places, under all conditions. I want my freedom, no strings attached to my freedom. I want to be free without any conditions. This is the natural urge that every human being has. We have not created this urge, we are born with that urge of desiring that freedom. And the reason is very simple. The reason why we want that happiness or freedom is because it is our nature. Except there is a very strange thing in our life, that we are seeking in our life what we already are. This is a very strange thing. We are seeking what we already are. And that is why we are to be told. Like the tenth man is told. Yes, they are searching for the tenth man, which he already is. Because of not counting himself, they came to this wrong conclusion that the tenth man is lost. And that conclusion is very firm in his mind that I am not the tenth man. Tenth man is lost, I am not the tenth man. There is nothing that will ever change that conclusion. No experience in his life, even his failure of finding the tenth man will never make him think that I am what I am searching for. It's somebody else who has to be told. That Upanishad says, Tattvamasi, that thou art, you are in fact what it is that you are searching for. And it is this, the search for what is already there is what creates samsara. By samsara we mean a life of constant seeking, a life of seeking, a life of becoming. I'm always seeking something because I'm a seeker who is a needy person, who is in need, who is inadequate and never seeking to be adequate. I would have become something in my life because I am not satisfied with what I am, and I think that I'll be happy if I become something else. There's a constant struggle to become something. This is what we call samsara. Even though the life of birth and death is traditionally called samsara, but just being, suppose, being born, etc., is not really a big problem. Birth and death need not be a problem if you were otherwise comfortable and happy. To such an extent that for a person who is free, to that person, even the death does not matter. Meaning that he knows that death cannot bring an end to my existence. Death only creates a different situation. That this body is not there, death does not mean that I will cease to exist. He knows it very clearly. And therefore everything is in order. Everything is fine as it is for a person who is free. And who is free? One has discovered that freedom is my nature. I do not have to do anything to be free. I do not have to do anything to be free or happy. That freedom of happiness I already am. This is what Vedanta wants us to know. And for that alone is a 15th chapter, the whole Bhagavad Gita and 15th chapter. And for that, this tree of samsara is described. How it is the life of becoming. Adasya mulani, anusantatani, karmanubandhini, manusya loke. How this desire to be free, this desire to be adequate, how it pressurizes me constantly to do something. I cannot remain comfortable with myself as long as I find myself bound. I cannot be comfortable with myself as long as I find I'm inadequate. I'm insufficient, incomplete, insecure. As long as I think I am, there is a pressure from within me. Meaning that I cannot comfortably remain with myself who is inadequate. Therefore, the sense of inadequacy which I am suffering from pressurizes me to do something. Come on, do something. So I want to be free from inadequacy. That causes desires, actions, results, desires, actions, results, and this process goes on. If life is a process of becoming free, it will never come to an end. Because we can never become free. A free person cannot become free. Like, there is a famous statement among some Vedantins, Vaishnavas. I want to taste sugar, I do not want to become sugar, they say. This Advaita means what? You are Brahman. I don't want to become Brahman, I want to enjoy Brahman. There is all that, quite all that. So why? But who is saying this? Important thing is, who is saying that I want to taste sugar? I don't want to be sugar. Who says? Sugar is saying it, is it? If somebody other than sugar was saying that, then if chilies are saying that I want to be sugar, I want to taste sugar, don't enjoy, then it's understandable. But sugar is saying that I want to taste sugar, I don't want to be sugar. But you already are. You don't have to taste sugar to be sweet, you already are sweet. So that truth, that freedom is already my nature. I don't have to become free, that has to be discovered. And that can be discovered only when there is a... Only if the tenth man, in fact, takes time to investigate as to who he is. He has taken for granted that he is not the tenth man. Is it reality? What is required in our life is to investigate or to subject to scrutiny our present conclusions about ourselves. We have all these conclusions and opinions about ourselves. And all the opinions and all complexes amount to one thing, and that is, I am inadequate. So whether I think I am father, I am mother, I am rich, I am poor, I am successful, I am failure, whatever I think I am, in all of them, there is this one thread, and that is, I am inadequate. The Swami is successful person, not inadequate. Successful person is inadequate in the next moment. Right now he is adequate, he thinks. But then when something else happens, he again discovers inadequacy. Thinks there is inadequacy. So this conclusion on my part, what Vedanta wants us to do, is to subject the scrutiny, this basic conclusion on my part, whether inadequacy, is it my nature? What I take myself to be, is it the reality about myself? Am I really an incomplete being? Am I really an inadequate being? Am I really an unhappy being? That because I'm trying to be happy, behind it there is a conclusion that as I am not happy, and therefore there is an attempt to become happy. As I am not free, therefore there is a struggle to become free. But this conclusion, as I am not happy, as I am not free, is that the right understanding of myself? Is that the reality of myself? This is what Vedanta, basically, this is what Vedanta teaches us. All my conclusions, we are all born with opinions or conclusions. Because it is the nature of our intellect to judge and to have an opinion about everything. That's the nature of intellect. It is a adhyavasayatmika antahkanavrutti, a mode of the mind whose nature it is to always judge and conclude. So we always judge and we always conclude, we always have opinions. We have opinion about everything in the world. That's our nature. Without opinion we cannot proceed. Unless I have, when somebody calls me on the phone, I first should have opinion of who that person is. Who are you? Who is talking? I cannot initiate a talk. I cannot have a dialogue with that person unless I know who that person is. And not only who that person is, who I think that person is. Because generally speaking, we have opinion about all persons also. Oh, he says, I am so and so. But I say, he is my friend. He says, I am so and so. My mind says, he is my enemy. You know, so this is how I have to know that person. So the person can be Tom, Dick and Harry, anybody. But what do I think? My friend, my enemy, my father, my mother, my son, my daughter, etc. Some kind of branding must be there before I can proceed to talk to that person also. So it is the nature of intellect to judge. And the first thing that the intellect judges is his own self. I judge because I'm the closest to myself and I always experience myself that way. The first thing I do is I judge myself. And what is my judgment about myself? I am inadequate, I am incomplete, I am insufficient, I am insecure, I am unhappy, I am unhappy, I am needy. And based on that conclusion about myself, I conduct myself in the life. So the whole life, meaning that all that I do is all based on this conclusion that I am a needy person. Unfortunately, in spite of fulfilling needs, the needy person remains, even though needs are being satisfied one after the other. And still, the needy remains. And so, that is a problem. Need is not a problem. The needy one is a problem. The need not be a problem. That I am needy, that is a problem. So once that goes away, then doesn't matter. You see, desire is not a problem. That I am a desirer, I am a need, that is a problem. Vedanta says that nothing is a problem except you. You are the problem. You about whom you have this conclusion that I am needy. And therefore, tatah padam tat parimargitavyam, yasmin, the fourth verse told us, yasmin gataha nani vartanti bhuya. And the third verse told us, this is pure samsara, is all mithya. That your neediness is not a reality about you. Therefore, recognize this. Even have an intellectual understanding, which also comes only from the teacher, that you are not what you take yourself to be. Or put it this way, that your need cannot be satisfied by anybody or anything. That you have a need, and first of all, discover this fact, that nothing in the world can satisfy that need to become adequate. Nothing can make you adequate. Nothing can make you happy. Nothing can make you free. Although, we seem to feel that things are giving me some happiness, but that happiness always is only temporary happiness. It's a fleeting happiness. It is there and it goes away. Vedanta says, what goes away is not really there. It's like this man, I told this story, like this man with a traveler. And he set out from his home to, on the foot, and he's traveling, he has to go a long distance. He has walked for 3, 4, 5 hours, and then it's very hot, it's already noontime, he's very hungry and very tired, wants to take rest. Searching for a place, he found a beautiful lake, and on the bank of the lake, lots of trees are there. Right, in a wonderful place, let me go there, have some fresh water, let me take some rest. He went there, and he looked into the water to take some water in his palm, to wash his face and to drink some water. As he looks down, what does he find? He finds a golden necklace in the water. He is thrilled. He forgets all his hunger and thirst, everything is forgotten. The next time, how to get that necklace? And he knew swimming, and there was, he plunges into water, he dives into water, and catches hold of that necklace. It came in his hand, it slipped. Came up, dived again, and again, and again. Every time the necklace, as though would come into his hand, he has all the hope now, I've got it, and it slips from his hand. After trying a number of times, he is tired and exhausted, disappointed, frustrated, sitting there, not knowing what to do. Fortunately for him, another traveler comes along. This fellow calls him, he says, come here, I have to show you something important. With one condition, that whatever you find, we will share between the two of us, okay? So, yeah, what is it? Come here, look down, oh, gold necklace. He says, then why did you yourself not take it out? Why are you waiting for me? He says, no, I'm trying since 1 hour, I'm not going to get it. When this was said, then the new traveler has a bright idea. Instead of looking down, look up, and he finds a golden necklace hanging from a branch of a tree, being reflected in water. That is how happiness is. Looks like happiness is there. Looks like it has come to me, and it slips away from my hand. Again I try. We are diving into water like this from time beginningless, and this continues. So when this understanding arises, either from our own experience, pariksha lokan, karma chitan, brahmanan, nirvedamayat, examining all the achievements that have been made so far, and all achievements that are possible in future, examining them. Whatever is achieved, whatever is created, what is required is always going to be limited and cannot give me what I am seeking. To discover first of all that what I am seeking is limitless happiness, that nothing limited can really satisfy me, this is what we have to discover about ourselves. We have to pay attention to what is it that I want in my life, what's the desire behind all the desires. We'll discover that what I am seeking is limitless. Nothing limited has satisfied me so far. And nothing limited. You see, what happens is usually a person thinks that even though so far I am not satisfied, I'm sure there's something out there which will satisfy me. So even though they did not find the 10th man so far, just we are hopeful, he may be behind that hill, he may be over the tree, in the, someplace. Then one has to now recognize that this way I am searching for is not the right way. That's not the way to go about in my life. There's something fundamentally wrong. At least to discover that nothing in the world, no achievement or accomplishments can give me happiness, even an iota of happiness. As I said, happiness that appears to be coming is only a fleeting an appearance of happiness. Like the gold necklace. And we have to procure it from where it is, not where we think it is. Since the necklace is reflected, it must be there someplace. So since the happiness is reflected in the world, therefore it must be someplace. Where is it? It is in myself. So whenever I see happiness somewhere, I am looking at my own reflection, not knowing that. I am chasing my own reflection. Can you imagine? Like the sun is all the time revolving around the earth. The sun is chasing something. What is it chasing? It is chasing night. The sun is after night. It can never find. So also I can never, you know, I am chasing my reflection. So this is the first thing, to get this insight into the life, that nothing in the world cannot here and hereafter. When people think that, okay, the earthly objects cannot give me what I want, maybe in the heaven there are things that can give me what I want, and therefore, he may shoot for heaven. And this is how these religions actually converted people. Christianity came about converting people with this idea that, look, there is heaven. And don't worry about the life here. We will, heaven is promised, or paradise is promised, where all your desires will be satisfied. Or same thing Muslims also say, that is, Islam says, this life is nothing. This is to be given up. That's why they have no problem in, the suicide of bombers, because they know that this life is useless, futile. It is life in the other world, which is what is the real life. When that is impressed upon your mind, then people have expectation that the happiness in the other world also will make me happy. Vedanta says that if there is other world, then also that happiness cannot be essentially different from happiness that is here. Tadida here, karma chito loka kshiyate, eva meva mutra punya chito loka kshiyate. Just as what you attain as a result of an effort is perishable, so also, even if in the heaven also, what you can possibly attain as a result of virtue or action, that is also equally perishable. So this has to become clear to us that nothing here or hereafter can satisfy me, can give me what I need. Yes, the world can give me comfort, no doubt, and there are two kinds of needs. One are the needs centered upon the self, other are the needs centered upon non-self. So body also has certain needs, and the objects of the world can satisfy those needs that are centered upon non-self, but they cannot provide the need, they cannot satisfy the need centered upon the self. Nirvedamaya, this is how one discovers a dispassion. Dispassion means freedom from attraction and rejection both. And so attachment and aversion, one discovers dispassion. Not an aversion. That you don't hate the world, you don't have aversion for the world, you are objective with reference to the world, the world is additive. So you do not look upon that either as a source of happiness, nor do you look upon that as a source of unhappiness. Some people say the world is so unhappiness. That also is not right. It is neither source of happiness nor source of unhappiness. Therefore we can be objective. As the Swamiji says, seeing things as they are. Sobhana dhyasa, superimposing more than what it has. Other people go to other extreme, superimposing less than what it has. So if somebody who says money is everything, that's the problem. Somebody says money is useless, there is another problem also. Because money is money, it has a value in our life. Yes, everything has a real value in the life. Name, fame, recognition, power, position, all of them have some place in life. Not the place that I think they have, that's all. I think that they are the end, then in fact they are all the means, they are not the end. Artha kama are the means, they are not the end. If this clarity is there, then we can very effectively and happily function with the world. The world is not a problem. Unless we make it a problem. And we make it a problem by superimposing what the world doesn't have, or superimposing or rejecting what the world has. Dealing with the world objectively, then everything is okay, everything is in order. Then prasada buddhi is possible. Whatever happens, is all in order. The reason for whatever happens. So that's what the third verse says. And then, tatah padam, then what to do? Parimargitavyam yasmin kataha nanivartanti bhuyaha. Parimargitavyam, anveshtavyam, has to be sought for. Saha anveshtavyaha, saha vijignyasitavyaha. The Atma, the Self, or the Truth. Truth is not something to be achieved, anveshtavyaha. Is to be investigated, vijignasitavyaha, has to be known. And that's how a seeker, a spiritual seeker, gets transformed from being a seeker of moksha to a desire, a jignasu, from mumukshu to a jignasu. Mumukshu, the one who desires moksha. Jignasu is the one who has discovered that moksha can be as a result of knowledge, and therefore he is desirous of knowledge. Thereafter, so up to third verse, whatever is described, is meant to create the sampatti, ideally sadhana, chatusha, viveka, vairagya, samadhi, shatka, sampatti, mumukshutvam. So very, in a very short span, Lord Krishna describes these things. What is viveka? Viveka is, viveka means discernment, discrimination, that nothing in the world can give me what I'm such. Number one, I want a permanent or eternal happiness. I want uncreated happiness. What I want is eternal and not something impermanent or perishable. And everything in the world is perishable, and therefore perishable cannot give me the imperishable. And that brings about a certain attitude towards the objects and things of the world. That attitude is called vairagya. As a result of understanding the nature of my need and understanding the nature of the world, it brings about a certain attitude. This is called vairagya. Freedom from raga and dvesha. No more attachment. Attachment is not there because I'm not superimposing more than what it is. No more aversion, not superimposing less than what it is. So when I superimpose less, then there is aversion. When I superimpose more, there is attachment. Both attachment and aversion are results of superimposition, aviveka. When there is not there, the mind becomes free from raga and dvesha. With this mind, you can enjoy things as they are. Today, I cannot enjoy things as they are. You serve food in my plate, I take some salt and pour in there, some sugar and put in there, some chilies. I must spice up things. I cannot enjoy things as they are. In the life also, we cannot enjoy things as they are. We always have to spice up things. What is vairagya? Objectivity. You find that things are beautiful as they are. Everything is delicious as it is. Everything is beautiful as it is. Everything is in its own place, in the right place. There's no need for me to change, meaning that I do not need anything to change for my sake. Usually, I have a demand that things around me should change themselves or rearrange themselves for my sake, so that I can be comfortable. You sit there, you tell my child, sit there. Don't move. Why? So that I am comfortable. It is not for the child's comfort that we tell, for my comfort. Hey, shut, stop talking. Hey, you're talking too much. Don't make noise. I give the instruction what? For my comfort. So most of my demands are meant for my comfort. When these demands are there, lots of disappointments are going to be there, because how long anybody is going to fulfill your demands? A time will come and child says, do what you want to do, I'll do what I want to do. They'll find out different things. So far they're tracking them on internet and things like that. Now there is texting and stuff like that. Nobody can track anybody. You know, you keep doing something and you don't know what might, for me, you don't know what the children are doing now. Formerly we were able to keep some track of telephones and things like that, because that telephone was a means of communication. So somehow you can hear on the second telephone or something like that. That is, now they are texting like this. In fact, the child says, Mom, don't call me, text me. He doesn't want to be bothered on the telephone. Text me. So text me a few sentences, I'll reply, I'll also text back a few sentences. And that too is there is a code language. So it's a very, you know, in a few words you can communicate. So I'm okay, Mom, don't bother. I'm all right. So, that being the case, you know, your need that you should know everything, you should control everything, is becoming more and more difficult these days. As it is, nobody could be controlled, but now it is becoming more difficult. So this demand on my part, that things should rearrange for my comfort, things or people should change for my comfort, this is called See, this is called kama, this is called desire, and that is sure to bring about lot of disappointment. So what is vairagya? Becoming free from this demand. I don't make any demands upon the world. It's very important. We cannot, it is not possible for us to really contemplate upon Atma or contemplate upon the truth unless the mind is free from this distraction. So what in fact distracts my mind, what pulls my mind away from myself is my own demands. I'm always concerned whether the fellow, I told him to be quiet, is he quiet or not? I have to always keep track of that. I told them not to go here and not to go there, and now I have to keep track whether they went there or not. I'm not saying that you do this to your children. What I'm saying is that as best as possible, I mean, you know, only sannyasis can afford this. Because there is nothing, no connection at all. It doesn't, you know, there is no relative, there is no role, as Swami says. Then that is why Bhashyakar always says sannyasi, you know, every time he will bring in sannyasa. With sannyasi, ideally with a sannyasi, one has no agenda. Other than seeking knowledge, no agenda at all. Is no agenda for others. No agenda that he should even give bhiksha. That he goes out for bhiksha without agenda. Otherwise you get upset. Oh, he did not give bhiksha, I went there, no agenda. Did give bhiksha? Haricha. No haricha. No agenda. No demands. No expectations. As to what other people should do for me. No expectations. This is called vairagya. When we become free from making demands upon the world, making demands upon the people, making demands upon the situations. This is not possible as long as you are living your active life of duties and responsibilities. Not possible. Therefore, when you keep saying this, Swami, right away the question will come, Swami, what about, do you mean that we should have no demands upon our children, that they should study? Should you not expect that, Swami? Swami, should you not expect that my spouse should come home in time, that we should have dinner together? Should I not expect that? You know, I'm floored with this question. Because it is true that this has to be understood in a particular, in a proper context. But let us put it this way, as best as possible, I do not make demands upon themselves, others, for my comfort. If I have demands upon them, it should be for their comfort. If I want my child to do something, it is not for my comfort, it is because I think that that is best for the child. So if you make demands, it would be when the guru may have demands upon the shishya. A teacher may have demands upon the disciples. Hopefully, it is for the well-being of the disciple. But what is vairagya? A state of mind which is a non-demanding state of mind, which arises as a result of understanding things. So vairagya or dispassion, which has arisen as a result of understanding, is going to be a mature vairagya. Tatah padam tat parimagitavyam yasmin gataha nanivartanti bhuyah. Tatah, thereafter, having gained the state of mind, which is called vairagya, dispassion, freedom from demand, freedom from expectations. Because I say, demand and expectations distract my mind. When there is an expectation, I am always concerned whether things will happen or not. It's always in my mind that concern is always there. And so I keep looking at my time. Suppose I do something at the end of this class, and then there is a call waiting at 11:15, and I say that our class is 10 to 11:15, so call me at 11:15. So 11:15, the call is coming. You are concerned from 10 o'clock onwards, not at 11:14, you know. Because whether it is 11:15 or not, you have to see. You start seeing it from 10:45. Moment there is an agenda, the mind is going to be occupied with agenda in one way or the other. And then that any agenda with reference to world is an obstacle to the agenda of self-knowledge. Investigation into the nature of self is only possible on the part of a mind which is free from all worldly agendas. Yes, go Vairagya. Nothing to achieve, nothing to accomplish, nothing to demand, because of discovery, of an understanding that things are all right as they are. So that is tatasparam, tat parimargatavyam, parimargatavyam, anveshtavyam, vijignasitavyam. So jnatavyam. Then you have to know that pada, that abode, tadat padam. So padyate iti padam, that which is attained is called padam, that abode. Now even this pada or abode also gives an idea that it is something different from me. Therefore Lord Krishna qualified that word padam, yasmin gataha na nivartanti bhuyah. There is an abode having gone where there is no return. Yasmin gataha na nivartanti bhuyah. Having gone where there is no return. Now this is contrary to all the basic rules. Basic rule is when you go somewhere, there is always coming back. If you reach somewhere, there will be coming back. It cannot be that you go somewhere and you are there permanently. Why not, Swamiji? I came to the US, here, I will be here permanently. But there is a purpose for which you go somewhere, you know. When you go somewhere, there is a purpose. When the purpose is satisfied, there is no need to be there. Or you went there because you went to Hawaii. Because there's some money, so you lived in a 5-star hotel on vacation. How long will you be there? As long as the money in your pocket lasts. So the reason why you could go somewhere, as long as the reason is there, so long you can remain there, and then you'll be ceremoniously, unceremoniously sent out. The moment you cannot pay your bills, the same fellow who took your luggage, the usher, he will throw your luggage out, you know, right person. That's how the world is, that's how life is, and that's the reality. There cannot be a place where you have reached, where you cannot come back, where you have to come back. And so, here Lord Krishna talks about an abode having reached, there is no return. Now, this is contradictory to the common understanding of any abode. That means that this is a different kind of an abode. It is not abode in a non-conventional sense. That means there cannot be really a reaching involved. If reaching is involved, the returning will have to be there. Yasmin gataha, having gone where, na nivartanti, they do not return. Then, if they do not return, then they could not have gone there also. That means, going there or not returning, both of these are only said in a figurative manner. In fact, there is no reaching involved. Yasmin gataha na nivartanti bhuyah. Having gone there, they do not return, which means that there is no going involved. But then why does Lord Krishna say having gone there? Because my constant attempt is to go somewhere, to reach something, to become something. Because presently, my life is what? A process of becoming something, reaching something, attaining something. I cannot be comfortable with where I am, what I am. I cannot be comfortable with. Otherwise, everybody would be meditating. When can you meditate? When you are comfortable with yourself. Where you are. How you are. If that is okay with you, then your mind is available for meditation. Otherwise, mind always thinking to become something, to reach something, to achieve something, to acquire something. So since my orientation today in my life is that I want to reach somewhere, In my mind, I am planning for that, some kind of a perfect situation. I am hoping that that's my dream house. You know, they say a dream house. What's a dream house? Having gotten where there is no lack at all. Everything is perfect. Everything, there is everything that I want. I'll be totally comfortable. So also, we have a dream situation that I have an ideal I, a dream I, having become it, there will be no more becoming there. So thus we are pursuing some elusive goal. Like the tenth man searching for the tenth elusive goal because it will never be able to find him. Or like this man looking for that gold necklace, he will never be able to get it. So also, in our life, we are always after elusive goal. Some ideal I want to become. I want to reach somewhere. So that there is no going involved. Basically, what I want is freedom from seeking. As our Swamiji says, what is the desire behind all the desires? Freedom from desire. Desire behind all the desires is freedom from desire. I don't want to desire because desire makes me uncomfortable. A desiring mind is an uncomfortable mind. Desire means there is a pressure inside and I'm not comfortable with the pressure inside. I want a freedom from desire. I want freedom from becoming. I want freedom from seeking. I'm trying to become something, all right, so that I'll ultimately have no need to become. I'm seeking something, achieving which I'll be free from seeking. And so what we really want is freedom from becoming, freedom from seeking. But since I've taken for granted that I am not what I'm seeking to be, there's always some place else I want to reach. Therefore, Lord Krishna uses those words that, oh, you want to reach somewhere? You reach there. But you want to reach somewhere from where there is no return. That's what you want. So Lord Krishna describes here what it is that we are seeking. Jasmin gataha nanivartan dhuyaha. Having reached where, having gone where, they do not return, is a description of what I am seeking. So if we analyze what it is that we want, we want to reach a place. That is why they talk about abode of Bhagavan, you know, as our Swamiji would say that, like heaven or Vaikuntha or some place like that. Having gone where, there is nowhere to go. There is no return. You will have eternal dinner with God. Or you will have eternal presence of God, etc. That's the idea. So Lord Krishna says, that's right. That your desire is quite genuine. That you want to become something so that you have no more becoming is a genuine need. You want to reach somewhere from where so that you don't have to struggle anymore. Ultimately, what does the river want? A river is constantly struggling. She is gushing someplace. When does she want to go? So that there is an end to this going. The river wants to reach that abode, having reached where there is no more reaching involved. And we also want that abode, having gone, nowhere anything is to be done. Then there is a total freedom from all rushing and all gushing on the part of the river. That's what the river wants. That's what we want. Yasmin gataha na nivartanti bhuyaha. That yes, there is an abode. Having reached where there is no return. Meaning that it is a permanent attainment. It is as though an attainment. Moment you call permanent attainment, it is as though attainment. But whatever you attain cannot be permanent. If it is permanent, it cannot be attainment. Therefore, it is your own self. Tatah padam tat parimargitavyam yasmin gataha nanivartanti bhuyaha. Having developed that vairagya, discovered the vairagya, you should then investigate into that reality, that truth, having known which there is no more samsara. So how would the Vedantin interpret this verse? Gai gati, you see, Vedantin say very cleverly that all the verbs are of motion can be interpreted as verbs of knowledge. So when gati, going comes means knowing, they will say. Even Lord Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Vraja means to go, means no. You see, so all the words of Gati are interpreted by Vedanta and says the words of knowledge. Yasmin Gataha. Means what? So Yasmin Gataha. Having gone where or having known which? Yam Jnatva Nanivartante. Or Yad Jnatva Nanivartante. Not Yad Gatva, Yad Jnatva Nanivartante. Therefore, here is something to be known and not somewhere to be reached. Yasmin Gataha Nanivartante Bhuyaha. They do not return again. Tameva Chadyam Purusham Prapadye. Who is he? Adyam Purusham. Adav Bhavam Aryam. Adyam means that which is there from the beginning. Which is beginningless. When something is there from the beginning, means it doesn't have a beginning, is it? Adyam means what? Adav Bhavam. That which has been there in the beginning. So if it is there in the beginning, it itself should not have a beginning. If there is a beginning, then there is some other beginning. That means it's beginningless. So that which is there in the beginning means that is beginningless. Which doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an end also. Meaning that which is free from beginning and end. That is free from the limitation of time. Because beginning also is in time, end also will be in time. So that is free from beginning, free from end, it is free from the limitation of time. Limitation of place. All kinds, it's limitless. Tamevacha adyam purusham, that purusha, the person. We talked about it in the last class. Purusha purnatvat purusha purum yena idam sarvam purnam. Purnatvat purusha, it's called purusha because it's purna, it's full, it's complete. The one because whom everything is complete. Or purusha, the one who dwells in the city of the body. Purishayanat purusha. So purusha means what? Atma, chaitanyam, consciousness. Purusha, the limitless. The whole, complete, or limitless. The adyam purusham prapadye. Prapadye, I take refuge unto. So the second line tells us. First line says that you should investigate into this reality, knowing which there is no becoming, no becoming involved. You have to know something. For that you must investigate. For that you should go to a teacher. It is not self-investigation. Here, investigation is with the help of the teacher. Atmavare drashtavya, shrutavya, mantavya, yadidhyasitavya. Sri Yajnavya says to Maitreyi, Atmavare drashtavya, hey Maitreyi, his Atma should be known. Should be known as an immediate reality of yourself. Aparokshataya. So aparokshataya jnataha, it must be known as your own self. How do I know? Shrasotavyam vashravanam, mananam, vidhyasanam. What is shravanam? Listening to the teaching of the teacher. Listening to the unfoldment of the scriptures from the teacher. So teacher does not tell us anything new. Teacher is more like a tape recorder. It only relays what is already there. That's the kind of teacher we want. We do not want a teacher who tells us something new. This is orthodox or traditional belief, you know, that we do not want something that is your own. You tell us something that is in the scriptures. Meaning that, ideally, a teacher is the one who unfolds the statement of the scriptures. The only originality the teacher is in the matter of unfoldment, not what he unfolds. What the teacher unfolds is what is stated in the Upanishads, in Vedanta, in the scriptures. So where is the originality of the teacher? What distinguishes one teacher from the other, if at all, is the method of unfoldment. Every teacher is unfolding in his own way. He has an own way. depending upon the audience, depending upon the time, depending upon the place, then the examples will change. Everything will be depending upon, you know. So right now we can give examples of, as I said, texting and stuff like that, which would not have existed 25 years ago. Somebody said the time is going to come, Swamiji, when this child is born. And child says to the nurse, "Hey, give me your cell phone." Yes, sir. He says, "Why? I want to text. I want to text God that I have reached here." Something like that. That is not impossible. Because children are born with this knowledge, looks like. Even a little one who can hardly talk can do this stuff. For me, it will take a lifetime to do that, if at all. They do it right away. So they are born with this. And so, the examples will be different. The what is unfolded is the same. But the context is created. So for us to understand anything, a context must be created. In the right context, it then strikes us. Or we see the thing. So the teacher has to create a context. Like the tenth man, like this discovery of tenth man also, before this tenth man is discovered, a context is created. He says, "Come on, you count again and let me see how many of you are there." Then he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Context is created. He says, "Where is the tenth man?" And he says, "You are the tenth man." Even if he said you are the tenth man, without this context, it may or may not have been clear to this fellow. When under this condition, so, "Oh, I'm the tenth man, yeah, that's right." And a tube light happens. How I did not count myself. Thus, in the teaching, a context is to be created for the student to see what the teacher is communicating. And therefore, the student and teacher combination is always unique, therefore the contexts are created, and for that, the examples and methodology may be somewhat different. But there is no originality in Tattvamasi. That sarvam khalvidam, that everything is Brahman, what is God, is a reality. That alone every teacher unfolds in his or her own way. So it doesn't have to, you can just simply copy what a teacher is doing also, that is very convenient, that also you can do. But then, therefore, the idea is a shrautavya, atma or a shrautavya, the atma must be listened to. That means that you should listen to the unfoldment of the scriptures from the teacher. So that was shravanam. Listening is what? Listening to. And listening is what? Deliberating upon. So as a student listens, some pravritti or activity is going on in the mind of the student also. You are not just listener, because every listener has a mind, and mind thinks, and it follows what is being told. So particularly when the attention of the student is totally focused upon what the teacher is saying, if that kind of a bond is established, which is also important, this is talk of Shraddha. The reason why Vedanta also talks about Shraddha. What is Shraddha? Shraddha is that which is a trust in the teacher. It creates a relationship and a bond with the teacher, where the student has an implicit faith in the words of the teacher. He is convinced that what the teacher says is right. That conviction, he is convinced. So when the mind of the student is convinced that here I am in a place where I can trust completely, that nobody is going to take advantage of me, the person, first of all, the person who is talking knows what he or she is talking. Number two, that person has no agenda. That they are not saying these things to me for some agenda. Like otherwise you have this, somebody rings your bell and somebody comes along in suit and tie and things like that and says, "Who are you? Oh, you are a Hindu. Well, look at our book here." So they are also teaching you something, but with an agenda. What's the agenda? To convert. So that kind of agenda is there. The teacher should not have an agenda other than making the student understand. That's the only agenda. But no agenda in terms of taking some advantage of the student. And that can be there only when the teacher has no agenda at all in his life. If the teacher does not need anything, then alone he will not have agenda. If there is a need inside, I am sure that that need will always try to fulfill itself in some ways. When there is a need in our mind, in some way it will influence what you are doing. If I am seeking donation from you, then when even in teaching Vedanta also, we will be taught in such a manner that in some way the idea of that donation will come in. Somehow it will come in. Some agenda. How to catch somebody, hook somebody, whatever. Anything like that. That is going to influence the teaching. If the teacher has any agenda other than unfolding the truth, then it will influence his teaching. The quality of the teaching will be influenced. So teacher is the one who has no agenda at all. When the student is required to have no agenda, it is a question of teacher anyway. But that is called Vairagya. So when there is a trust that the teacher has no agenda at all, the teacher does not need anything for himself or herself, and doesn't need me, doesn't want to use me, doesn't want to exploit me, that I am completely safe and secure, then he feels secure. When those fellows come in the morning, ringing bell and talking, you are not secure. You know that this fellow has come here to, for something. He wants to convert me. But you want to prove that my religion is wrong and his religion is right, and this, immediately these things, concerns come in your mind, you become defensive right away. So, student is secure, comfortable. Knows that there is no agenda, meaning I am accepted as I am. The teacher doesn't make any demand upon me. I am accepted as I am. The student feels that sense of comfort. When his mind is free, then he will be totally focused upon what the teacher says. Otherwise, you are always, when you listen to a politician, you know that these fellows have always some agenda. So when you listen to them, not even you start interpreting also, what does he mean? What is his intention? Why does he say that? What is the agenda behind saying it? But not for a teacher. So student doesn't have a strain right now, generally speaking. Because the trust level has become so low nowadays, so you can't trust anybody. That means whenever I am communicating with somebody or interact with somebody, I must always go a step ahead and imagine and infer why this person is saying it. Swami, why are you saying this to me? What is the reason? So we think that before the reason there must be some reason why anybody do anything. At least there is one place where there is no reason. Then you can trust. In that case, your mind is free. You feel comfortable. You feel secure. It is that secure, comfortable frame of mind which is required to objectively listen to the scriptures. That's why this sampatti, the inner wealth, one of them is called Shraddha. Lord Krishna says, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Who gains the knowledge? One who has a Shraddha. Meaning an implicit faith in the words of the teacher and the scriptures. Tatah padam tat parimargitavyam. So jnatavyam, you have to know the self. From achievement, he has come to the point where he wants to know. From an achiever, he has become what? A student, a desirous of knowledge. Shravanam, mananam. In the time available to you, you keep on reflecting upon what it is that you understood or heard. Jnyasidabhyam, assimilating what you understood. There's a full-time activity of the student, nothing else. The student also has no agenda other than this. Tatah padam tat parimargitabhyam yasmin gataha nanivartanti bhuyah. No. Yatah pravritti tatah tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yatah pravritti prasuta purani. So, Adhyam Purusham Prapandye, I take refuge into that Adi Purusha. Take refuge into the Purusha, the person, the self, the consciousness, the reality, Brahman. I am totally surrendered to that. In the last class we talk about that surrender. What is the nature of surrender here? I am surrendered that I want to know that person. That my relationship with the Purusha is that I want to know him. Not that I want some benefit from him. No, you see, when you go to Tirupati, you don't only go for darshan. Just recently, the father told me that he took his family, his two sons, and this to Tirupati, and then the children going from Mirar Estate, standing in line for 4 hours and having darshan for 30 seconds. What is this? I don't want to come here again. So I had to stand in line for so long, and then I could see the Lord only for a few seconds. I don't want to come here. Then father says, look, my son, the reason why we come to Tirupati is that whatever sankalpa you do, whatever desire you have in mind, become satisfied. That the fellow likes it, okay. So, now whenever you now go to Tirupati, go with a desire, knowing that Tirupati satisfies your desire. That's why there are so many Tirupatis. Here also we have, but you want to go there. Here also you go, but there. Because that's a very powerful deity. And whatever you want, becomes satisfied. Meaning that even when we are having darshan of Lord, then also some agenda is there. Similarly, do you have an agenda in knowing God? That by knowledge I will go to Swarga, by knowledge I will get this, by knowledge I will get that, etc., etc. In that case, you are not surrendered to Lord, you are surrendered to the object of desire. Then when I go to Tirupati with an intention in mind, then Tirupati is not important. I am exploiting Tirupati for fulfilling my desire. He is not an end, he is a means. Is it not so? What is surrender? Not a means, it becomes end. Then Purusha is end, not the means. Meaning that I do not want to accomplish anything else by knowing Purusha, I just want Purusha. So with that resolve, that is called surrender. In the context of knowledge, you know. Surrender of course is at many levels, but here, what's the nature of surrender? Surrender is that all I want is knowledge and nothing else. Tameva sadhyam purusham prapadye. Adhyam purusham prapadye. I take refuge unto the Purusha, the Paramatma, the reality, the Self, who is beginningless, endless, who is limitless, who is my own Self. Yatah pravrutti prasuta purani. Who is that Purusha? The person is nothing but Ishvara or Brahman, who is the source of this entire universe. So, like a magician, throw this magic, a net of magic, and brings everybody into his control, you know. So also Ishvara has thrown this net of creation and brought everybody under control. So only way to become free from that control is by surrendering to him. Devi Hyesha Gunamai Mama Maya Dhatya Mame Vaya Prapadyante Maya Metam Tarantide. Lord Krishna says, my Maya is extremely difficult to cross. Those who take refuge unto me, they won't cross the Maya. Yatah Pravrutti Prasuta Purani. We give a break for 15 to 20 minutes and then we come back here after coffee. So it's 11:30, come back at 11:50. Thank you.